two, one. Hello, everybody, and welcome to TYH. My name is Anglo, and with me I have Nike.
Hello.
And we have a friend, Nick. Say what's up, Nick.
What's up? Hi.
This is Nick Fuentes from the Graper Movement. He's coming on our podcast.
He's back.
Finally. Yeah, back.
It's great to be back. Hi, fellow Grapers. How are you guys doing?
Hey, you've had quite a career since we've last spoke.
There's been a little bit of controversy.
And a lot of gay sex.
Yeah. So, as an aside, is Nick Fuentes, like, actually trad cath, or he's like a normal cath?
I don't think he's Catholic. I guess it doesn't really matter, but was he raised Catholic? I mean, maybe he was.
Yeah, he was.
He's like one of the Midwest fucking Catholics.
As someone with a lot of experience with Catholic people, he doesn't really like, he doesn't act like a Catholic person. Like, people that are raised Catholic don't, I don't know. I think he's performatively Catholic.
Yeah, he's just trying to appeal to something. But anyways, yeah, I don't know why I brought that up. Yeah, I guess we'll just go on to the comments. All right, so we're going to start off with Dario Gabby.
Gab AI.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. The End of Jewish History by Francis Fukuyamaka Yarmuluk. That's a play on the last title of the episode. And then we got Rickert with the parachute and the Palestinian flag with a smiley face.
I guess that means you liked it.
He liked it. That's, you know, you just got to send those. I know there was a guy complaining about, well, not complaining. He wanted some advice on getting girls. Just send smiley faces. That's all you got to do. That's the recipe. And then we have Bobby Juiscard. And he just says, yeah, nigga.
Okay.
These comments kind of suck so far.
Step up your game, boys.
We got our friend Zoomerman, Norwood Zero reporting. And then Paul Fuslier says same.
Nick, are you have you been Norwooded?
I don't know what Norwood is.
Oh, it's a scale of baldness.
It's a scale of baldness?
Yeah, it's like a it's a way of measuring levels of male pattern baldness and its progression.
So, and is zero the lowest on the scale?
Zero means you have no male pattern baldness at all.
So the point is that as young whites, we are a zero on the Norwood scale, I guess.
That's right.
I am. Forever, man.
Yeah, I'm not balding at all.
No, but in fact, I'm growing more hair. It's starting to look like that guy from the Munsters with the...
I've got the good hair genetic lineage. Even like chemotherapy couldn't make either of my grandfathers bald.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got those hair genes too. I think it's just a sign of natural aristocracy or something. I don't know.
Some say low testosterone, but I like to think otherwise.
Yeah. Fuck those guys. Anyways, Paraglider of Peace, Sky King 1488 says, Nike has the beard and height of a Greek god. Not the body, though. What's going on, big guy?
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, Paraglider of Peace.
And he's met you in person, so.
Working on it. All right.
And Sunny Days says hashtag exposed. Did I ever tell you in this podcast that I had someone when I used to go to church? It was like a pretty, I would say semi-fundamentalist church, but they like allowed this gay guy in the church.
And well, how fundamental are you?
Exactly. But he's like,
I mean, I guess on one hand you can consider the fact that like, oh, well, this guy's a fag, but he wants to, you know, serve God and be a Christian. So, you know, church is a hospital for sinners. It is not a hall of fame for the pious. So,
but anyways, he would always like,
was he like a repentant faggot or was he just like a blatant homosexual?
Like halfway, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, at least he's trying, you know, whatever.
But he'd always say like hashtag whatever.
Be
like,
my friend.
Like when he was excited, be like hashtag yay.
Oh my god.
That was the craziest thing ever.
You gotta ask a priest, you know, is that, does that cross the line into like sinful behavior?
Yeah.
Because of how gay you are? I know it's not technically like a homosexual act per se, but it is really fucking gay. we need somebody to arbitrate if it's crosses the line into sinfulness or not.
Yeah,
I feel like there's definitely a phenomenon of like homosexual entryism in American churches, though. You see it like one or two starts to creep in, and
You can't let them into like any like positions of influence over the congregation,
even if they like portray themselves like, oh yeah, I'm celibate or whatever.
Yeah, like you're repentant, you're celibate, whatever, good for you. Like you're not, you know, continually living in damnable sin. Great, that's great, but you don't deserve a spot on like a church council or like any leadership positions for laity, or you know, it's God forbid, clergy. Like you can just be the guy at church, and I'll keep you away from my kids.
And we could just point and laugh at you.
I'll be like, see, you don't want to end up like that guy.
Yeah, there. I've noticed entryism myself in that church as well. It was like, you know, gay is bad, but we're gonna have gay people here who are celibate. But I'm like, I think eventually in 10 years, gonna start saying gay is okay. Just as long as you love Jesus, and I could just sense the trajectory right then and there.
I think there's something with like the entire LGBTQIA plus spectrum with entryism. I mean, you'll even notice in the corporate world, like transgender folks with an X tend to skyrocket to the top of organizations, and it's a really bizarre thing. Like they wedge their way in, and all of a sudden they're on top of the HR department or whatever. It's interesting.
Yeah, that I've seen that too.
They are strivers, and they want positions of power to enrich their own.
Yeah. I remember, like, folks being some obscure term that people in the, I don't know, underground music scene would use. Like the
Tumblr.
Yeah, Tumblr people. And all of a sudden now that's, like, normal with the X, you know.
We just need to reclaim it. Folks with an X and a V. That's the future.
Yeah.
Where's the V?
At the beginning, like folks.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. I thought you were like trying to shoehorn it in to a vowel, like replacing.
Oh, like return?
Yeah. But like, we're going to replace the O in folks with a V just because we can.
Why the fuck do people do that? What is the point of writing Evropa?
What are they trying to do? That's the original because they didn't have U's, I don't think, in Latin, right? Like in the script originally, it was just, they kind of just used V's.
Well, the EU diphthong is Ev.
Yeah, in Greek.
Yeah, Evropa. And I think it also applies to Latin as well. EU is a Ev sound, not a U sound.
I'm just saying, like, as a Nordicist, I reject
as a Nordicist, none of that
sanitization.
They just gotta use runes.
Yeah, nigga taking like a good 10 seconds to write one character, like it's Chinese, but instead of like being an ideogram, it's just one letter of an alphabet.
Yeah, that whole aesthetic of using the Latinate or the Latin like V seems very cringe to me. Looking back,
there is a use case for it, and that's in carving things, because it's harder to carve
carving things curves. Like 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, like you know, you see this in neoclassical buildings today, where if there's the letter U in something, they do the Latin V instead because it's more aesthetically pleasing and easier to carve as a V instead of like a curved U, because when you're like, you know, chipping into stone, it's easier to just make straight lines.
That makes complete sense. So like the curvy letters comes from like writing on paper, like, because cuneiforms all lines. That makes sense.
Yeah, you just have to make one little chip in the right direction and there you go. Whereas, like, if you have curves, well, now you have to, like, you know, an infinitesimal number of points you have to account for. And it just takes a lot more time as opposed to just, like, one line diagonal and another line in the opposite diagonal. There you go.
Boom.
But I can get the next comment. Oh.
The next comment you said?
Mm-hmm.
Zoomerman.
Fatidicus. Oh, you're going down again.
Yeah, because I missed his last comment. So
gotcha. Zoomerman says you can help delay dementia if you use your brain a lot. And that's Zoomerman, that's not... I don't think that's true, actually.
Nah, I think it's true.
It's not... I mean, it depends on the pathology of dementia. Like, there's a lot of different kinds of dementia, but the vast majority of it, like, arises as a result of, like, physical processes that have nothing to do with how sharp your brain is. Like, you can be a big reader that does puzzles all day or, you know... word finders, and if you get Lewy body dementia or Alzheimer's, that's like a physical process going on in your brain.
Yeah, I guess I'm fucked.
Damn. Well, you can still keep reading anyway.
Yeah,
it's still good to read, so you're not like a retard.
It might be kind of trippy to read like while having severe Alzheimer's. It might be kind of cool.
Bro, it's hard enough to read not having Alzheimer's when you have like if your mind wanders in the middle of a paragraph and then you realize you've been reading but you don't remember what you just read and you have to start over. Imagine that, but it's not just because you're distracted, it's because your brain literally cannot crystallize that short-term memory.
Yeah, learning is, reading is a skill that I didn't start. I had to train myself to not wander off into the, you know, while reading paragraphs. I guess that's what the psychiatrists would call ADHD or whatever. But it's a skill that took me a long time. And I think a lot of Zoomers and millennials and stuff have a hard time reading just normal books because they have that wandering attention span.
It's totally a result of increasingly fragmented forms of media.
Yeah.
And I remember at one point, I mean, like when I was a kid, I was a super avid reader, and I'd just gotten out of high school and I realized I actually could not read a book. Like, I couldn't just sit down and read. And so I had to like spend 1 or 2 hours a day, like just making myself read, even though it sucked, and got back into it. But I feel, I mean, Gen Alpha, you know, we're the young whites, but there's even younger whites who have been watching Elsa Gate for their entire childhood. And, are completely illiterate. Like, a lot of teachers are talking about it.
Do you have any, like, siblings, cousins, or like nieces or nephews that like are fans of Skibidi Toilet Shit?
I do. Or they were
former fans. Tell me about it.
They told me it's cringe now, so they said.
Oh, thank God. The cringe based cycle will continue to become faster.
Purify the world
each year.
Yeah, my cousins are, I think, definitely Gen Alpha. And I was asking them, like, yo, I love Skibidi Toilet. Isn't that cool? And she's like, yeah, that's cringe. That's old. That's like 6 months ago.
Thank God.
I think Skibidi Toilet is honestly no worse than...
It's not. It's just many YouTube poop.
You remember Pee Pee Poo Poo? Pee Pee Poo Poo kept coming back around. That was like a big thing for a while.
It was retarded when it came back, though. And I hated it then.
Yeah. But the first time, did you like it?
What, when I was like 3? Sure, that was funny.
Yeah, I honestly don't think Skibidi Toilet is that weird. It's just, it reminds me of like videos I would watch like 10 years ago on YouTube, like YouTube Poop with fucking Gary's mod. It doesn't seem like it's that, I don't know.
The thing that made it different from like finding a mindless YouTube poop funny is that it's the same thing every time and they're obsessed with it. Dude, there's never like toys sold on Amazon about my favorite YouTube poop when I was a child.
Yeah, but
it's neo-Dadaist. Yeah. You just don't get it.
Hey, and Evola used to be a Dada artist painter that we're just training a whole generation of Evolians, you know.
They're writing the tiger.
Skibidi Dada.
Yeah. Really are. They are writing the tiger.
There's your show title.
Skibidi Dada, thank you. It's always, takes a lot of effort to come up with titles sometimes, so I like it when it happens organically like that. But we'll continue to the comments, which is our content. Fatidicus Sana Commando says, if you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear minoxidil in your hair. Living in a pod in San Francisco, you're gonna meet street-shitting people there. That's actually a song I like.
Bass.
I, you know, you guys like any of that kind of stuff? Mamas and the Papas, even though that guy is a fucking sick pervert who like raped his daughter.
Wait, what?
I did not know about that.
I don't know the lore behind that.
So the main guy in the Mamas and the Papas, I think he's the main guy. He like groomed his own daughter to be his girlfriend or something. Really disgusting shit.
It's like Roman Polanski shit.
Yeah, but like his biological daughter. Disgusting. I think is it John Phillips, I believe? Let me see. Abuse allegations. Yeah. Yep, John Phillips, his eldest daughter, Mackenzie Phillips. Yeah. Oh, God. She had a relationship with her father, like a romantic relationship with her father starting in 1979 when she was 19 years old, and said that the abuse began after Phillips raped her while they were both under the influence of heavy narcotics on the eve of her first marriage. Some weird.
What?
It's really fucked
up. That's disgusting.
Yes.
Bro, it's just like
new levels.
I'm not even going to make the comparison, but like,
it's new levels of depravity.
Yeah.
I'll stick to Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Yeah. But that one girl that was in the Mamas and Papas, she was that blonde girl. She's pretty hot. Phillips.
I wonder what she looks like now.
Probably not even alive.
Dead?
Let's see. No, she might be alive. Oh, she's 79.
Still looking good.
Michelle Gilliam Phillips. Oh, I think she married the main creep. I don't know if that's her biological daughter or not. I don't know. It's something weird. And they had that fat Jewish girl, Mama Cass, as they called it. Ugh, ruining it. Disgusting. Ellen Naomi Cohen from Baltimore. Disgusting. Anyways.
Jinxie. He says, believe it or not, I actually saw with a Palestinian flag waving from the back of the bed mount a little while ago. This stuff is penetrating the general public, and it's satisfying to see. That's awesome.
You know, as a side note, just the other day in my area, I saw a convoy of muscle cars and big trucks with Iranian flags going down the highway, honking their horns.
No way.
It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I wanted to follow them to wherever they were going.
Dude, this is the new army of Xerxes.
That is some funny shit right there. Yeah, I haven't really been seeing that. I haven't seen big truck people with Palestinian flags yet, but I've seen people with Israeli flags hanging in their home because they're good evangelicals, you know. So it's you got to show solidarity.
Dude, I've been in towns in the middle of fucking nowhere, and it's like got a population of less than 200, and.
There's like an
Israeli I'll be damned flag if there wasn't a fucking Israeli flag hanging up in the middle of town. It's like, goddamn.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how isolated you are from the rest of the country, like the propaganda still reaches you.
It's worse almost because a lot of them tend to be very just evangelical.
Well, yeah, but still, they get the propaganda, like, despite their isolation.
Yeah, well, propaganda
is their church. Recently went on a road trip like in the rural Northeast, and it was crazy because it was around Christmas, and like in these towns with like maybe 1,000 people in them, every single public building had a menorah along with a Christmas tree, like every single one of them. And there's like 500 people that live here. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I thought you were going to talk about how I've heard people driving through like rural New England or like New Hampshire and stuff like that and seeing Confederate flags, which is funny.
Oh yeah, there's that too. There's a part of Maryland. There's like whenever I think of Maryland, I only think of like the you know, DC metro part of Maryland. But there's a part of Maryland, like Western Maryland, that's basically Appalachia, and it's unbelievable the things you see there. It's crazy.
I feel like every state has that somewhere.
Yeah, it is every state. You'll find that
California, you know,
California, 100%. Oregon.
Oh yeah, Oregon, you know, too. Yeah,
you'll find it in New York.
People talk about Oregon being a shitlib state, and that's true regarding like Portland and Eugene or whatever. But outside of it, it's totally not. It's like
Now, here's a challenge. If any of you people listening out there have seen somebody flying a Confederate flag in their house, like from their house in Connecticut, let us know. if there's like one state, I don't think there's like any possible place where you've got just the ruralite constituency that would have that. It's probably like Connecticut or Rhode Island.
Fucking nutmeggers. You know they call themselves that?
No. Why do they call nutmeggers?
I have no idea, but it's
fucking meggers.
Yeah, I know nothing about those areas. Besides what
it's there's this process. It's like the Southernification of whites.
Yep, for sure.
There's a lot of papers about it, and it really sucks because like you can be in like rural Michigan, and they're into that same like you know negrified country music.
Oh yeah,
like the indigenous white traditions of rural whites around the country have been replaced by this culture that is ultimately owned by Jews and negrified, which
yeah, it's something that's stuck country music that. Television you know goy tunes
exactly, and I like a lot of old country, and then there are like you have those annoying alternative country people out there, y'all alternatives that are like Antifa, but they're like trying to do old style country. It's like shut the fuck up, bitch.
Yeah, people just doing the bow of the fifth column routine.
Just like
fucking hillbilly uprising, that kind of shit.
The redneck revolt,
fake shit.
Redneck revolt. Yeah, no, it's disgusting.
It's fake because they're all from fucking middle class neighborhoods, dude.
Yeah, you people aren't. You have no actual affinity for rurality.
Yeah,
you just want people to be urbanite.
And there's
like in a remote place.
There are these like country musicians. I think one of them is called Nick Shoulders. He's like kind of rising a little bit in the like. Alternative scene, and he admitted like when he was growing up, because he's from Arkansas, he's like, oh yeah, I hated the South and everything Southern and country music, but I realized
also
it's just like you're still kind of you still have that attitude in a sense because you're just
fuck you. Arkansas is probably like to this day the most proud like per capita of its Southern heritage and all like compared to every other state in America. Gives places like Alabama, Mississippi, and Tennessee a run for its money. I think I would go as far to say that Arkansas is, like, if you did a poll the whole state, you have the biggest proportion of the population saying that they're proud of being a Southerner.
Nick Shoulders. He's like a they-them.
This is what I was going to say is that, like, the... You know, you've still got Harrison, but what it is I think queers really form like a fifth column anywhere. I mean, like whether you're in Eastern Europe or you're in Arkansas or Alabama, like a lot of these people aren't even necessarily from middle class neighborhoods. They're just like autistic, like young men that used the internet too much and got radicalized to hate everyone that they came from. It's like this bizarre kind of self-hate, and these people are really fucked up because they hate their entire family, and they've imbibed this crazy propaganda, and they hate themselves.
I've seen that play out in person. People from I had a professor from Tennessee. He was like a younger guy. He was just always talking shit on like Tennessee, and we're not even in Tennessee right now, dude. Let's just chill. And he's like, they're so backwards, and I liked punk music and skateboarding, and it's so retarded, it's so backwards.
Dude, what a fag.
Shut the fuck up, dude.
I fucking love Tennessee.
He always had to like every opportunity when he wasn't talking about his stupid fucking retarded subject. I hate rednecks. Well, shut. Okay.
Honestly, Tennessee is the best state in America.
You can say that there are Arkansans per capita might be the most proud of their heritage, but for any given one of these states, if you go to reddit.com/r/Arkansas, you can find these people, and every single day they'll be saying that, you know, this is a disgusting state. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you know, it's like they have this just insane view of reality, and they hate everyone around them, and there's enough stuff out there for them to just completely surround themselves and alienate themselves from the people that actually raised them and from their communities.
Yeah, I've seen people just straight up hate their families at gave them everything, paid for their shit, and just, oh yeah, you guys are disgusting white trash, you know, fucking pieces of shit. But continuing on, we have a paraglider of peace. He responded, yeah, the Palestinians are basically rebels, brothers to the Confederate German and white struggle.
True.
And then Jinxie replied, this was in a best coast state, so not really a southern thing. Just that you'd usually expect truck guys to be clinically stuck with aughts, guat, brain rape, or be completely indifferent to the subject. But seeing that had the same energy as white adolescents on social media, rooting for the Taliban. Nature is healing. We got Gook Nukem. He says, you're balding. Have early onset dementia. You are only 33. Well, you're the host of TYH.
No! I have been found out!
Yeah. Then we have Zoomerman again. He's always here. He's our loyal Sino-Tibetan. He's not Sino. I don't know. He's our guy. Is he from... Where is he from? He's from Taiwan or something. I don't know. He's like Asian. But he says, not all the comments were read. It's over. And then what did you reply, Nikkei?
I told him he must submit early and often.
And Bobby Driscard says, you better say yeah, nigga, next time.
And then please explain what you mean by this, Bobby.
I don't know. And then Sunny Day says, exposed again. Truly exposed.
He really just wants to reveal it. He's like our number one doxer.
Exposed. You got Brosif Goobas. The most relatable dating content, please. Oh, no, more, sorry. I am 27 and relate. Nikkei, you are a fucking psycho for reading through your old texts with an old flame. Ha ha ha. I can remember why it didn't work out just fine. Don't need to consult the records.
I've got a bad memory for that sort of thing. So, like, it'll occur to me, like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed talking to that woman. Like, why did that stop? And then I'd have to go back and be like, oh, that's why it stopped. Yes.
You didn't want tertiary dick. Remember that?
Oh, dude. It was a good meme.
Did we say that on the podcast, or is that just among us?
I don't know if we have. But not worth going into right now.
I mean, regarding the dating content, I don't know. Just get a girlfriend.
Yeah, just get a girlfriend.
just be yourself.
Just be
free. Go talk to her, bro.
Yeah, also just thinking about it too much makes it worse. I think that's just the general advice. I mean, I'm not some sort of like hookup coach or dating coach, so don't. And also don't listen to like the weird ass fucking, what are those, what's that Negro's name? Andrew
T. The one that died in Ukraine?
Oh, who died in Ukraine?
Coach Redpill?
Oh, no. Are you talking about?
Okay.
Yeah, like Andrew Tate, like MGTOW, whatever, fucking just don't get into that. Because that's...
Not that it's something to really like dip into too much here, but I'll say I'm the biggest woman defender out there, and I think you should enjoy talking to women and be honest with them. And they can be smart and interesting and fun to talk to. And it's important to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I tend to be like that too. I mean, I've had my times where I'm like, yeah, women are fucking stupid. And they kind of are, but so are we. Everyone's retarded nowadays.
I will say, like,
a lot of
in
men
terms
are just
of like
fucking...
PUA content, I know he disavows it now, but Roosh V, his book Bang.
Bang Thailand.
No, not any like
Estonia,
not any of the travel specific ones, but just the one titled Bang.
Have you read that?
Oh man, years and years ago, I got the audiobook.
You're
like a long
up.
Ass time ago, and I didn't actually take any of the advice in the book, but it helped put me in a better mindset about like, yeah, okay, you can approach dating logically. And, like, have an idea what you're going to do going into a date that'll make it better or worse. And I think that was beneficial.
I've only consumed Roosh V's content post-mushrooms. That's the only stuff I've really gotten into.
Yeah, I was never into him.
He's a hoot now.
I think I was, like, a huge fan of his orthodoxy pilgrimage slash travel vlog series.
Where'd he go?
That was really interesting.
Mount Athos?
No, he went to monasteries in America.
Oh, okay.
And just, like, traveled across small towns in America and gave his thoughts about what he saw in each of these different locations. He's an interesting guy. I think he's got a lot of good things to say.
Yeah, well, read Bang, the forum, not the book.
Yeah.
Then we have Pulse Foulier again, saying the future belongs to the Nazi Zoomer. He sent a link, but I'm not clicking on it. It could be a...
The link is dead, actually.
What was it?
I got a DNS address, could not be found. I don't even remember. I probably clicked on it when he first posted it, but it's been too long.
And then we have Wide Mouth James Mason saying, Nigger Dee Dee.
I want to say that's Niggerty D.
Oh. What does that have to do? Okay.
Niggerty Toilet.
Oh, maybe. M. Luther Kang says, The End of His Knob by Francis Fukuyama.
Fuck your mama.
That's good.
That's a good one. Francis, fuck your mama. I'm stealing that one.
Sunny Day says, I'm extremely cool because his comment will not be read on the TYH episode next week.
Whoa, what a paradox. Too bad it was read.
Little Warrior says, while I had a lot of good content, I was a bit disappointed by the myth of the 20th century 2023 recap. Hank Oslo hoping for the, quote, eradication of both sides, unquote, in the Palestine invasion made him seem no different from a Twitter fence sitter. There's a difference between affecting hard-nosed pragmatism and pure callousness. At least they got Nick back on. He was great. Maybe Borzai could go on for another episode sometimes. I don't know. I haven't listened to that.
We don't need another episode of commenting on other content.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never even listened to them, to be honest. I'm kind of only listening to tedious.
Okay, well, I will say you do need to listen to Myth of the 20th Century because it is an amazing podcast. I mean, I'll have my children listen to that show one day.
Huh.
Yeah, all I'll say is that it is really awesome to have Nick's like schizoid Aryan spirit on, and I think it does balance out some of the cold economic calculus. So I can agree with you there. Nick is awesome.
It's a great show.
It's really good.
But is it as good as this show?
I mean, they do a lot more effort into their so yes, I'll give
them an RSS feed.
Oh, God.
What's an RSS feed?
Rickert says, when did he say that? I don't know. Why don't you listen to it and figure it out yourself? Norad says, where's the RSS feed leak? Huh?
What?
Shut up.
Anyway, Rickert says again, prepping the car should just be reading comments from TDS. It is a great segment.
We found the, like... gold here because we don't have to put much effort.
It's just our bit, you know, and we like talking to you guys. We like responding to your comments and using it as springboards
for
conversation.
And sometimes when you prep, it's like, oh, it doesn't actually really fit anything we're talking about anyways.
It could just be boring.
Exactly.
But if you leave a comment, we know that you're interested in it because you went out of your way to say it.
We have Rev Nat Sock saying, I'm about to live in my van, so maybe I can popularize neo-Nazi van life.
Yeah, start a TikTok.
Yeah, dude. Do a TikTok. Do some dances.
Yeah, just throw some Roman salutes in your, you know, neo-hermit or neo-nomad.
Neo-nomadic.
Sleeper van.
I think there's a long tradition of that in American white nationalism, the van life.
Oh yeah, van.
It goes way back.
What do they call that?
Confederate flag outside the van by the river.
Or the hate van?
Well, no, there was the hate van. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
Hate bus.
Okay. That was the funniest shit in the world.
I don't think they went as far as to sleep in it. I think they just went from hotel to hotel and like stayed the night around different places in America. But it was base as fuck.
Yeah,
but today we're so atomized. Today, even the fucking hate bus is no longer possible. Now you just have to buy your own van and you sleep in it alone.
You live in it because your parents are just like, get out of here, kid.
And then the real estate market is like,
fucked.
Ha ha ha. You're never going to get anything. Nah.
Yeah, there'd
be diligent. Get a real estate agent you can trust and who's willing to like go the long haul to get you a house and get you a house at a good price. Like it's all about doing your homework and not being like sold a false bill of goods by some shyster who wants to make a quick sale. You need somebody who like you trust that they actually want you to make a good purchase and like be happy with the lifestyle you live with that new like whole mortgage to deal with.
Also take your time. It takes a long time. And watch Scuffed Realtor.
Yes. Scuffed Realtor. Dude, I fucking love Scuffed Realtor.
Cool guy.
Maybe that's some advice for myself. I'll watch some of that.
Yeah.
It's Nick Rochford.
Mm-hmm. Oh, never mind. I'm not going to watch
it. What? Why not?
You don't like him? Okay, so not to rehash, but you guys talked about Viper the Raper last episode. And I feel like I really missed out because I actually have a very personal Viper story.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no.
Many years ago, Viper the Rapper's number was leaked online. And some friends and I spent a couple days catfishing him.
Oh, fuck.
And then got on the phone with him and he was like, come on, man. And I feel like that might have like set him down this lifestyle. Like, I feel a little bit of personal culpability for it.
So you're the reason why that woman was held in his like house for years?
I feel bad, but it might have been. The dates line up. I know.
Wait, they do?
Yeah, about the time she went into captivity.
Oh, shit.
So you think you had him down bad enough to kidnap a woman?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you hadn't like, you know, been a nuisance over the phone, this woman would never have been kidnapped.
Yeah, he definitely didn't have any kind of criminal tendencies before.
He was
an upstanding real estate agent and an independent rapper before that.
Yeah, with some beautiful beats. Yeah, that is well, crazy.
if it really weighs on your conscience, you should send her an apology letter explaining your role in her captivity.
Send her one of those like bouquets made of fruit.
The edible arrangement. Yeah.
We got Paraglider of Peace one last time between statins, SSRIs, Viagra, and Fox and Friends. My favorite retiree podcast is TYH. My buddies at the group home wheel around their radio and listen to our favorite internet audio program.
Oh, I'm glad we can keep the oldies young at heart with our content.
Yeah, but it was nice reading your comments, and now our content is over and we're in the void. No, I'm just kidding.
No, we've got a guest. We actually can talk about what he wants to talk about.
So, Nick.
Hi.
So you have a claim that you want to defend, but like you say
a
that
point to
yeah,
make.
Yeah, that the tech world is not cut off for all young white men.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that I just want to say is that there's a ton of money you can make, like with or without a degree, still relatively easily. And it is, still like a phenomenal career path for people that are disposed to doing that. And I know, you know, Mike at one point worked in tech and no longer does. And I'll sometimes hear him say like, that's over. But, from my experience, working in many different companies, there are not enough people that are anywhere decent at, you know, writing enterprise code. And there's a ton of people on H-1Bs that are incredibly expensive. And if you're a domestic citizen that speaks English and you have a room temperature IQ, you can learn to code and make like a really decent salary. And there's actually nothing in your way. So it's just something that I think people should still consider.
Now, wait, what if I'm a retard? Like, what
if you're a retard? You can still do it if you're a retard.
No, I'm not even joking. I don't believe you. You gotta explain. You know, and tell me as a retard here, why the fuck I should even consider this? Why should I have any confidence that I could do this job?
Most people who are professional programmers, who are white at least, are like Marvel movie fans. So unless you're like that retarded, it really is like something that I think pretty much anyone is capable of. It's like just reading. It's just like reading comprehension skills. And especially if English is your first language, you can absolutely dominate a bunch of like autists and Pajits in a room and receive outsized recognition for your contribution because
You know, maybe I have reading comprehension, but I don't have the attention span to follow an algorithm. So what then?
Well, literally just like we were talking about earlier, just sit down and focus on something and read. Yeah. And stop using social media for a while too. And stop listening to the young whites on TRS and just kind of go into hermitage until you get your attention span back, because that is mostly fake or artificial.
Yeah, that is true. Just
so you're saying as long as I can get like
basically
get
if you could
through
keep attention,
a paragraph of information, anything. You know, every 2 minutes or so, I can make it.
Yeah, it's I'm really just saying that like it is a career path that actually exists for a lot of people. And the reports of its demise are exaggerated. Like it's definitely still something that you can do. And I think it's an awesome line of work. And specifically, I mean, like aptitude does go into it. And I think even though it's a meme, like a lot of our guys are, you know, autistic men. Mm-hmm. And autistic men are actually like pretty good at programming generally. So just consider going into that. I mean, there's value in all kinds of work. And it's great to work with your hands and it's great to do all kinds of different stuff. But without a college degree, you can get like a really awesome career with just a little bit of perspicacity and persistence. And it just takes getting one chance. And so I just don't want people to give up on the idea of this because I see so much money on the table. And I don't want people to be demoralized out of pursuing it.
So, like, I've been, you know, out of high school for a long time, and I've just been, like, unloading pallets from trucks for, you know, the past 10 years. Like, what do I do? What do I do?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's actually a lot of resources. But if you just start with something like CS50 from Harvard, it's a nice, like, free program. Literally go through tutorials, learn stupid web development, and create a dumb portfolio and pad your experience and interview with small companies. You will be much cheaper to hire than much less qualified H-1B candidates from India for any one of, you know, a million enterprise contracting jobs that are out there. And it takes one company actually giving you a chance and working with you, and then you have a real work history. So just learn the basics. Learn to make a website. Learn, you know, basic things about computer science. There's a place to start, and there's a ton of content about it.
And now you said web development, but I've never been good at math.
It's really not math at all. It's basically language skills. That's what most of it is. I think most people don't touch a lot of math at all. It's closer to formal logic. And it's really just like be patient. Be patient and learn the stuff and take your time, because it's not actually that complicated. It's just abstracted from the way that people normally think in their day to day. So it takes a little bit of time to get used to and to mull in.
Now, you say all this, like, and I go to the fucking Indeed.com and I see like, oh, well, we want at least 3 years experience in this for the starting
like
position. I mean,
well, you know,
you still apply.
You can lie. You could apply. You could also lie. I mean, like I wouldn't necessarily like, I have not done that, but you can literally write whatever you want on a fucking resume, submit it to like 60 different places. And if you get into an interview and you can talk, like you're gonna be fine.
So, like, what should I say in an interview that they don't spot that I'm a liar?
You literally just have to have a friend as a reference. But other than that, I mean, you need to spend time, you know, reading and writing code and understanding, you know, idiomatic ways to talk about different things. And it'll take a little bit of time kind of immersing yourself in that culture. Mm-hmm. But it's if something is comprehensible to like enough people to be a huge portion of our economy, it's probably comprehensible to you. Like you can understand it. It's not something that is beyond the reach of ordinary people, and you are capable of doing it.
So you're saying, like, you know, a retarded nigger like me has a chance.
Yeah, especially someone like you, actually.
Wow. Okay. Well, this is very interesting information here, and I hope that some people listening have gotten some new moralization to act on this.
Yeah, I think the problem is that it's a lot of people just don't know how to learn things on their own. And it's a skill that you eventually can develop.
You pick up from YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically consistency.
Yeah, just do it every single day.
Consistency.
Pick a project that is too hard for you, that doesn't make any sense, and work on it every day and be confused and frustrated with it and keep doing it. And get used to the idea that there's nothing that you can't do that other people can do.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have that mental blockage right there, and that stops them from learning a language or doing this or doing that.
So let's say you don't want to commit to doing the Harvard course.
That's the end of the story.
Harvard course right away. You want to like convince yourself that you still, could break into this field. Where else would one start?
Well, that specific course is free, but I mean, there are a ton of free resources. Like literally just Google, read a stupid article written by an Indian about how to get into web development, and watch dumb YouTube videos and learn it. Like there really is, the door is wide open. Like there are a lot of companies still hiring for these kinds of roles, and you can start out as a code monkey. But there's definitely a pathway to learning basic programming skills and whatever you're interested in. I talked about web development, but you can also learn all kinds of other stuff about embedded systems or really whatever you want. If you really like robots, you can learn about robots, and you can actually get a job working with robots.
Well, I like Roblox. Bucks. Robux.
Robux?
Yeah.
He's rolling in the Robux.
Yeah. Doesn't Robux, don't they use like, what is it?
Child labor, yes.
Yeah, child labor. No, Roblox. They have what's the language you use to make the scripting language you use to so people can make their mods or whatever.
I have no idea. I don't play Roblox.
I've never played Roblox.
I actually haven't. It's surprisingly old for how like relevant it still is.
Oh yeah, I remember it being like one of the things. Like you go to GameStop as a kid and you look at the gift card tower. And you see, like, oh, you can buy Robux, and like,
what the fuck is Robux?
Or like, oh, it's Lua.
Yeah,
they use Lua. Lua's nice.
Yeah, so if you're a Roblox addict, maybe you could just start messing around with that. Maybe.
I think a lot of our like Gen Alpha listeners are probably already writing Roblox mods in Lua. So
yeah,
it's a good jumping off point.
Put that in your portfolio. It's like when an interview happens, bring that up. Say like, hey, look. I made this thing that was, gained X amount of popularity, and I received Y amount of revenue from this creation, or like, a Z amount of people played it before. And, that's impressive because not everyone's done this sort of thing. And it took all this effort. I did X, Y, and Z to accomplish it. And things like that, when you're talking in an interview, set yourself apart from others in a way that matters to employers, and it's like genuinely impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another thing is that the things that you will learn in college right now for tech don't like super prepare you for like the average job in tech. And so you do have an opportunity to, I mean, create literally any passion project. Work on talking about it and show that like you were interested in it talk about the choices you made and why you made those choices. And that's something that really speaks to people whenever you are interviewing and trying to get into the industry. If you have just any real, actual deployed project that you've built that is beyond what most people who are graduating with four-year degrees have actually done, because they've learned a ton about, you know, data structures and different programming languages, but they haven't actually done the really annoying thing, which is writing production code that's shitty, and managing their time doing that.
Like, what you want to have is a story to tell. You need to have a more or less coherent narrative about what you've done and why. And you can go on ad nauseum with detail about the personal experience you had from it and what you learned from it. Even if, like, you didn't learn something new, if you just, like, something that you learned before but was really cemented or made concrete in this story is something great to talk about. People fucking love to hear that. Employers love hearing that stuff.
And one thing that I will say, since this is a racist podcast, is that that is something that South Asians are really, really bad at. Like, actually crafting a narrative about something and talking about a process they went through and having a story to tell is a communicative skill that a lot of them really, really lack. And it's another way that you can differentiate yourself. White excellence will carry you pretty far.
And it's, like, not even hard. It's actually the more creative and fun parts that set you above and beyond these just code pajits.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, that stuff isn't just trivial, because, like, if you're actually working in the industry, if you're on a team with a ton of code pajits, they will understand, you know, technically how to do things, but the understanding of the reason for doing something, like if you're building a feature, who are you building it for? Why are you building it? What's the reason for this? I think there's a lack of understanding.
What was it like working with these people?
And, yeah.
You know, get into, like, that business aspect of things where you talk about how you navigated the interpersonal aspect of development and just working on a project, because there is a very relevant component there, and employers do care about that because they recognize it as something that affects their, you know, the quality of their service. If they know that you have experience, like, dealing with people in this kind of setting, and, like, if you get thrown into that setting again, you know how to handle it. They value that immensely.
Yeah, so one thing that I'll say is, if you can spend a little bit of time reading about agile methodologies and being able to bullshit about them, about Scrum and all of that shit.
Yeah,
it's almost cult-like bullshit, but there's a little bit of value to it. And being able to say, I understand that, like, there's value in delivering software quickly and well, and having a process in place and solving issues that come up with that process is something that's really appreciated. In terms of, like, the actual experience of, you know, working on teams, it's very, very weird, especially in enterprise, which is where I started out, like, big, big companies. It is crazy how there are so many people that just do not know the reason why they do anything they do, especially like Indians, Nepalese people, Bengalis. They kind of form, like, cartels, and they promote each other and they worm their way into organizations, and they can waste millions and millions of dollars working on projects because they don't understand the reason for them. So it's kind of like becomes this Ouroboros where there's, like, there's no reason for this feature I'm building. It's just, this is the process I'm going through. I'm building this chart. I'm doing this, you know, open ticket, closed ticket. I think that having good English skills and having an ability to craft those narratives and to talk to people higher up and to see the forest through the trees is incredibly valuable in those organizations, and can really distinguish you, because you can actually say, this doesn't make any sense. Like, why are we doing this? Or, I'm noticing a recurring problem here, and here's a way I think this could be solved. There's a lot of people that aren't reflecting at all that work in big companies. And you can actually make a huge difference by just being someone who has a brain.
Yeah, and be attentive and like make notes of patterns that you see and be able to articulate them. If you can do that, like you've like made yourself so much more valuable to a company without actually having to really do shit. It's just you being aware and like you care enough to actually articulate it and explain it. And there's just so many people who don't do that they pay way too much for their job anyway, that if you can make that difference, setting yourself apart from those people, you are a golden ticket to these people.
The other thing I'll say is if they don't reward you, like if you're doing this and you're, you know, building up these narratives about yourself and your progression through your career, you can get a job making, you know, 60,000-70,000 a year, which is like pretty good in the middle of the country and not as awesome on the coasts. And you can work there for 9 months or a year, and then you can start looking somewhere else and experience, and you have perspectives on things, and you can really, really like bump your salary up really quickly by doing this. Like it's absolutely the norm in tech to switch between companies. And it's absolutely a good thing to do because you can really advance your station in life. And I don't think that like making money in and of itself is like, it's not valuable in its own right. And I don't like to think of everything in like a cold, calculating, economic way. But ultimately, like there are people that are taking these jobs no matter what. Like they exist. This is kind of the powerhouse of our economy right now. And there are a ton of people, especially white people, that are kind of just keeping themselves out of this entire ecosystem and all of this money. And they have this idea that, first of all, you know, college is a waste of time. Corporate jobs are bullshit. And you should, you know, work with your hands. You should, you know, I think that in terms of, you know, having a family, in terms of owning a home, in terms of like having stability in life, it's really valuable to just go, okay, I'm just going to make enough money so that I can own a home, kids. Cause I do think having kids is a valuable thing. And I just don't want people to pass up on opportunities like this because they don't believe in themselves, because there's people that are way less competent and way stupider than the average white person that are taking all of these jobs and making these huge salaries. And I don't think that's fair.
It's not. And especially because all of these people are, or a lot of these people are like foreign invaders taking our, like the economic birthright of our country away from.
Yeah, that's always
people who comprise this damn country. It's a shame.
That always like tripped me out as a kid. Just, you know, kind of as an aside to this, but just like seeing driving around the Indian parts where they have all the McMansions, the Indian parts of town where they have all the McMansions and they have all this money. It's like, you have no connection to this country. You have no connection to the founding of this country. And you have all this wealth.
And yet here you are prospering.
Yeah, it's, and people will say, oh, you're just being resentful, but it's like, it's just weird.
Yeah, I am. Fuck you.
The crazy thing is that it's not like a natural state of reality. Like it's not just something that is just the way it is. Like this is a result of intentional decisions. Like
yeah.
I remember always when I was younger thinking that old people that like hated Mexicans were just kind of at a stick up their ass. Like I always had that idea, like I didn't get it. But upon further reflection, like if you grew up in like the 60s and 70s when America was 85% white, and then all of a sudden like your town has like taquerias and everything just runs shittier, you're going to be pissed off. And it's not a natural thing. Like it's not something that is inevitable. People made the decision to let these invaders in, and everything is more fucked up because of it. Go to a Walmart in a wealthy, diverse suburb. Just go to a Walmart in a wealthy, diverse suburb and try to walk in a straight line down an aisle and see the results of people from every different part of the world trying to just fucking walk and buy things. You can't go anywhere. It's insane.
And they block your way too with their carts.
They're
and their,
either
like, ten
you know adipose tissue like surrounding them, or their ugly degenerate offspring.
Corpulent.
And they're used to fucking driving on the left side of the road. Like, seriously, that tiny thing makes such a huge difference. They just do not take the time to look around them and say, what are the cultural norms here? How do people behave in grocery stores here? Like,
like when I was in high school, the Mexican kids that were straight from Mexico didn't know that the plumbing works here in America. So they would just, like, wipe their asses and throw the shitty toilet paper, like, in the trash can next to the toilet. So we had piles of just nasty fucking toilet paper.
Full of feces. They stink.
It's disgusting. It's like, you don't realize.
It's like, we don't live like that in this country. You know, we actually have real plumbing here. We have water pressure because we build water towers.
Yeah, and I remember, like, driving near the border of Mexico. It was still in America, but we went to, like, I had to go take a leak at one of the public restrooms, and it was like it was a tower of just used toilet paper, probably about like 4 feet tall. You know, you know you could flush it.
Like, what do you mean flush?
Hey, flush? Hey, Walmart? Yeah, that is true. Just this sort of obliviousness of them, just like not. I don't know. You're just here buying shit, and you're not. You're just
dropping shit and buying.
Yeah, exactly. Dropping a little niños, you know. And
oh yeah, it's totally bizarre. I mean, there's different profiles, right? Like, I think honestly, in terms of like going to a grocery store, I would rather there be like either East Asians or Blacks, because they tend to generally move in a more similar way. But you get these South Asians, and they love to just stop or like walk the wrong way or go at diagonals through the aisles. And then Hispanics, the problem is just the kids. Just it's 10 p.m. and they've got like 5 kids at Walmart with them, just wandering around, standing in your way.
It's like when you're playing Minecraft and you have like the seeds and the chickens are following you. Yeah,
it's why you gotta like keep like
those old Dragon Ball Z trading cards in your pocket.
So I just give it to them. Hey, you know.
No. You don't give it to them. You throw them in the direction you don't want to walk in. All crowd around that, chasing the card. Like, oh man, it's Goku!
Hey, that's Goku Fulekug.
Hey, I saw it first. It's mine.
No, it's mine. Stop. No.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are the pro strats you won't hear anywhere else.
Yeah, that is a good strat. A good Stratocaster. Anything else you want to talk about, Nike?
I mean, I guess on
any
the
questions
the
you want to respond. Yeah.
Of career advancement and like good content to put you in a right mindset of how to treat this work environment. There's the guy on YouTube I like. His name's Joshua Fluke. His entire channel is just the critiques of the current corporate landscape and his advice of navigating it in a way that's like advocates for your self-interest and beats the tricks that employers try to use to milk you for all your worth and pay you as little as possible. And like, keeping tabs on these strategies that these people use is, I think it's important. I think it makes a difference knowing what you're up against. And so, yeah, I highly recommend that channel. Like, check in on it like every 2 months or so, just to see what he has to say. And like, maybe he gives you some insight onto what you've recently experienced in the workplace that is like, it's new to you, but it's like happening to everyone else at the same time.
Yeah, I do have a note on that, because I think there's, and I kind of wanted to talk about like millennials, because I feel like no one talks about millennials while we're here. But there is this like millennial mindset that I've seen, and there's something that sort of bothers me, where there are a lot of people that take this attitude of, you know, like don't let your employer exploit you, which I of course agree with. And I think there's there's a fine line between that and just like being very like individualistic and not giving a shit about your job. Like, I think there's a delineation there. And I notice a lot of people, like especially millennials online, will be like very much like, I show up to my job, I don't do shit, and I quit. And I sort of disagree with that like mentality generally, because I do think that it's like especially as white people, like we should have some sense of pride in what we do and try to do things well. You know, like if you go to like a McDonald's in a black area, there's going to be a ton of people with the attitude of, you know, I don't owe McDonald's shit. And I do actually think that like, if I was working at McDonald's, I would actually work hard and do a good job because it's my job. And I think there's actually value in that. Like it's a good thing. Like you shouldn't let yourself be exploited. But at the same time, I do think that there's value in like believing in doing what you do well. And I don't think you should abandon that.
Yeah, that is a good point regarding the millennials on Reddit and stuff talking about that.
Yeah, like r/anti-work, that whole kind of mentality. I think that it's very individualistic. And of course, like a corporation isn't something that you owe anything to. Yeah. But like work should generally be like work that benefits society in some way. Like you're doing things that contribute to at the very least our economy. Like you're doing productive activity. And doing productive activity and actually working is a really valuable thing, especially for men, I think. And so just saying like, nah, like fuck this. I don't know. There's something about it rubs me the wrong way.
The critique is just like, oh, you're making me do something I don't want to do immediately. And I want to, yeah, like you said, it's very individualistic and I just can't be bothered to do anything else besides go on Reddit.
In a lot of this, there's any over exaggeration, like not working on purpose, not like doing what you need to do. I'm convinced it's like part of what employers want you to think is that other people are just trying to be as lazy as possible and get away with it. I'm just not so convinced that like people are acting that way. I think it's more likely that, you know, just doing what you're asked and like fulfilling your duties isn't being acknowledged enough. Like you're not getting recognition for doing what you're supposed to. And you're left like with employers, well, you're not doing more than you're supposed to. So that makes you bad, where it's like, well, if you want me to do more, you should pay me more. You know, this is an exchange of money for labor. And, you know, going above and beyond without commensurate compensation, it doesn't help you. It only helps your employer. It's not a fair exchange. Like, a fair exchange would be that your compensation matches your contribution. And I think, you know, we're reaching a point where, like, they're not happy with doing what you're asked, that they want a result like beyond that. I think that's where a lot of people are facing like these bizarre social challenges when dealing with employers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree with that. I think there's just a balance, and obviously like people on Reddit are going to make anything way worse than it is. And you should, of course, advocate for yourself. I think all I'm saying is that in general, it's valuable to have like pride in your work and to like value doing a constructive activity and to do the best job you possibly can at it. And there's kind of a really black attitude that a lot of people have about work whenever they get into this. You know, of course, don't let companies take advantage of. Do your job description. But I think completely like dissociating your personal value from what you actually do for a living and thinking that it doesn't matter at all is a misstep, because the work that people do is something that they do all the time for their whole life. and there's value in it.
Mm-hmm. What do you take, or what's your response to the Bantz mindset?
The Bantz mindset? What's the Bantz mindset?
Be a nigger to the system, Bantz.
I don't know. I think that there's still like it's sort of abandoning the fabric of society. I think there is like you should hold the door open for people. You should be kind. If you have a job that like actually matters, you should do it. I don't know. I wouldn't like it if all the doctors in America started doing that. Like
that would fucking suck.
Yeah.
That's one example where I was like, please stop being a nigger to the system.
Yeah, that just seems like a pressing existence to always be like that. I mean, I understand you got to have some element of Bantz. Like, don't be like, I'm not going to take this program that's offered to me because, you know, my pride, even though
I'm too good for that.
Yeah, I'm too good.
Even though, economically, I qualify.
You know, like, I qualify for this. Like, yeah, you don't want to be like that. But do you think that's an appealing life to live your whole life on welfare and not do anything? I mean, unless you're doing something on your own, perhaps it's different.
I guess I don't think the idea has been fully fleshed out yet.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody has a good definition of what it means to be a nigger to the system quite yet. I think the baseline assumptions of it that, you know, you should be collecting the gibbs that you qualify for is like always universally beneficial. You should always do that. There's nothing wrong with that, and it's in fact, you know, on the aggregate better for our people that you do. But like what it means in a workplace per se, I think it's less understood, and people are still figuring out like, okay, so like what is an actually politically valuable position to take in terms of like strategic laziness, let's call it. I don't think that's
just a difference between Nordics well and Mediterranean. Let's just summarize it.
Well, no, I think what you said, you said on the aggregate better for your people. And I think that's really where like the moral distinction here comes is that,
oh, I mean, that's the entire moral calculus. It's about what's good for our people. Yeah.
And if you have a mindset that is focused around like the well-being of the collective over the well-being of the individual, you can absolutely say like these soulless corporations shouldn't be taking everything from me and from my family. Right. But just saying I'm going to like fuck off all the time and not do anything and I'm going to like scam. Like, I think that's actually worse for the collective. Yeah. I think our morality should be grounded in what is best for white society as a whole, as far as it exists. And so like that's really, I think, the distinction. I see a lot of people with a very individualistic attitude. And it disgusts me.
Yeah, because if everyone's like that, you know, you're just promoting degeneracy effectively across the board, and people are just not going to want to work for the collective.
There's a moral hazard there where it just becomes a bad habit of laziness.
You
take on the Bantz mindset because you recognize it as a revolutionary act, and like I think there's a very fair case to make to that end, and it's a valid argument. But do you let it change you permanently?
Yeah,
and how you
might start as a means to a political end, but it just becomes the end itself. You know, in and of itself, you're just like
right now you're like, you know,
oh.
You're used to it, and you're like, well, I want to be a nigger to this new system, too.
Yeah.
Well, as a union, like, a union will go on strike and stop working, but you can still get fired from a union job. Like, I think it's a similar kind of thing, where, like, refusing to contribute to a system that doesn't benefit you and doing that in a collective way makes sense. But refusing to engage in any collective pro-social activity whatsoever is probably a bad thing.
Yeah, and pro-social activity, you just gotta shut up sometimes.
The principle isn't all, like, behaviors that benefit people other than you are bad. It's that in our current situation, the principle is that in our current situation, we as a race are being taken advantage of to the detriment of our race in a way that our efforts and talents are being exploited and, you know, commercialized against us in a way.
Whether it's just through the way that companies operate or on a broader scheme of like how
individuals in charge of these companies use their profits to fund political efforts that undermine our values and our society. And all of that is what comprises the valid points to make about being a nigger to the system. But they don't completely invalidate, like, collective behaviors that benefit some people more than others altogether. Because, you know, if we did have a rational society that was organized in a, you know, sensical demographic makeup, then it's okay if, like, a company has a disproportionate benefit from your labor than you're compensated for. I mean, it's hard to avoid that in a lot of situations, especially when you're talking about large companies with huge scale operations. So we're not really doing away with that on principle. What people want to do away with is giving more to our enemies than we take.
Yeah, I think that ethic is completely reasonable, and it's something to keep in mind. I can definitely agree with that.
Yeah, it's just a fine line in trying to figure out the right middle path, you know, like the Buddha. You got to figure out the right middle path between that, you know.
All laziness must be in balance.
Exactly. I think that Gen Alpha, or maybe whatever comes after Gen Alpha, and maybe this is like a something that just people have been saying since like 2014, but I do actually think they're going to be like right-wing extremists. And I think that, or at least disproportionately white right-wing extremists. And I think that because of the way that millennials are. I think being raised by millennials, there's going to be like a things fall apart, Okonkwo complex, where like they just had these like childish parents that watched Marvel movies and refused to grow up and didn't discipline them, and they're going to rebel against them. I truly believe this.
Yeah, it's possible because their parents are going to be millennials, and with a lot of Zoomers, some people have millennial parents, but a lot of them probably have Gen X parents, and so you're going to see like having a millennial parent, that's fucking weird. And you have these.
It would drive anyone crazy.
Yeah.
Like
if your dad was Reddit mod, like what the fuck?
I mean, the millennial friends I have that have kids, they are, I can't think of any example that aren't from our milieu. Like I just don't know enough millennials that have kids outside of that political social group, where you would see this like departure from the parenting trends between just different age groups, and yeah, I think that component of Gen Alpha that actually exists, their parents are probably disproportionately you know, conservative or right wing relative to other groups, just because like everyone else politically just is not having kids unless you're black.
Yeah, but
I push back on that. I think that like there's still a lot of like white liberal millennials having kids. Like I see them all the time. They are all over the place.
I don't see them myself.
Yeah, it just depends on where you live, honestly.
It's an accident of just location.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of millennial people. They might not have a lot of kids, say, compared to boomer or something, but they'll have like one or two kids, and it exists. Certainly it exists. And I mean, what are you gonna do when your dad was in a post hardcore band and became a Redditor mod? Like, what the fuck are you gonna?
Yeah, I think that's
heroin, like, probably.
No, I think they're going to have to like create their own moral horizon, because they aren't actually given like a meta narrative to rebel against. Like, they're going to have to create their own. Like, it's people being raised by nihilists, I think, are going to rebel by like creating a moral order and enforcing it. I don't know. I think I've seen it in many. Like, I don't know how many people in our thing are like the children of libtards, but I've seen this play out. Like, it's definitely a phenomenon.
Yeah. And also, I'm just like thinking about, I've seen like, you know, Antifa people who have kids and stuff. And just imagine if your parents were Antifa fucking former crust punk loser, retarded Redditor, OnlyFans, porn gamer people. Like, you're gonna just, I don't know. You don't want to
imagine your mom is moldy locks.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah. You're going to be disgusted by them. Like, I think ultimately, like, you're going to grow beyond them as a young age because they're not adults. I don't know.
It's not even a matter of rebelling. It's just, you're just disgusting. It's not because I'm trying to be I don't want to be like my parents. It's no, you guys are fucking disgusting.
Yeah. It's more rejection than rebellion.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to have to happen. I don't think people can like survive like that.
Oh, no.
I don't think someone could be raised in that environment and not overdose on heroin, like you said, if they didn't find something. I don't know. Maybe they'll just all become Mormon.
That's the plan all along.
The Mormon long game is to make
Antifa parents.
Yeah, Antifa millennial parents, so they can swoop up their kids into the church.
Hey,
you send two blonde women to their door and be like, "Hi, I'd like to talk to you." I was like, "You want to talk to me?" So yeah, I'd love to talk. I actually have like a lot to talk about.
Have you heard of Skibbity Toilet?
Yeah. The gospel of Skibbity Toilet.
Which is that, like Book of Mormon Part 2?
Maybe.
Is there like multiple translations to the Book of Mormon? Like, there are multiple translations to the Bible.
This is the one that Joseph Smith did with the seeing a seer thing, the stone, the seeing stone, or whatever.
Yeah, the Book of Mormon is a translation.
I only trust the King James Book of Mormon. I'm a KJV Book of Mormon only.
Well, the LDS Church, they do use the KJV with regard to the Bible. That's their standard edition for the Bible. But
I only trust the King James translation of the Book of Mormon as well. Hmm. And because he hasn't published it yet, no true edition of the Book of Mormon has ever been published.
Do they believe that Muhammad was a prophet? Right?
I don't think so.
I swear they do. I don't know where I got that from. I'm pretty sure Mormons believe Muhammad was a prophet of God.
I think Baha'i believe that, but they're like the weirdest combo religion out there. Oh yeah, they're gay. Yeah.
Aren't they centered in Israel too, Baha'i?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically like the Unitarian Universal.
Yeah, it's Unitarianism for the Eastern man.
Yeah. The Yankees of of the Arab world.
Unitarian churches are crazy. They are really wild.
They were like far and above or far beyond like the moral sensibilities of the average American way, way before it was the new normal.
They literally went like, we're just going to celebrate all religious traditions equally. It's actually crazy. They'll have like a Jewish sermon and then like a pagan sermon and then like some Hindu stuff, just different days of the week. It's like an NPR religion.
It really is.
Yeah. NPR religion is the worst type of religion. I think the Episcopalian Church has kind of become that too, kind of NPR religion.
I miss NPR. I used to be able to listen to NPR. Like, I grew up on it. Mm-hmm. And I love their, like, not accents and the calm way that they speak. But once you know just a little bit and you, like, notice them lying, it just becomes enraging. It actually just raises my blood pressure.
Yeah, I've heard a few a little bit here and there recently, and I'm just like, this is getting me mad. Very frustrating. But yeah. I'm kind of glad my parents didn't listen to it growing up, because who knows what I would have turned out to be.
Yeah. I was doing a deep dive on President Taft last month, and just his religious affiliations, being a really wacky Unitarian. And for somebody who was like president at the turn of the 20th century, he was completely out of touch with the common like morals and religious standards of Americans, and somehow still made it into the presidency. He was like, I think, the first president to openly deny the divinity of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, a quote, "I believe in God, I do not believe in Christ."
Yeah, he just believed that he was a man only. Like, and that is completely heretical to the overwhelming majority of Americans at this time.
And fucking 1908, that is unbelievable.
Yeah.
He invented Reddit.
First Reddit president.
Yeah, this is
why he was so fucking fat. He was like the Reddit mod.
Yeah. Corpulent fella.
The first Reddit mod of America.
Oh, I think Skull and Bones, man. Holy shit.
From what I was reading, I think I was convinced the only reason that he had any chance of like becoming president was because of the endorsements he received.
Yeah, this is one president I haven't done a lot of reading on.
Yeah, no, I remember exactly what set me down.
Just know he exists.
Just learning about his bizarre religious beliefs sent me down a rabbit hole of like, wait, how?
Is he,
how did you win?
Oh, he's from Ohio.
An election like, you know, the presidency. When
he was buried in a piano box.
Yo, what the fuck?
Really?
Yeah.
What's up with this guy? Dude.
Oh, that's funny. But yeah, because Teddy Roosevelt loved Taft so much, I think that was the only reason why voters would go for him. Because
Roosevelt was such a popular president, getting the ringing endorsement that he did made him a tolerable candidate to the American voter.
He was fat as shit.
Yeah.
There were stories about him, like, getting stuck he flooded a hotel in New Jersey because he filled it up all the way and got fat
heard about that.
While he was president.
The version of the story I heard was that he got stuck in the presidential bathtub. And they need to like get a crowbar to get him out.
It's funny. He's just like an average American nowadays.
Yeah, no, he's probably like he looks healthy by most standards. He probably looks like I don't know. Name your favorite
grandpa,
like fat gutted bodybuilder.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else you would like to talk about?
I didn't have anything.
I don't have anything else. I didn't prep.
Yeah, we don't prep. We don't need to prep. We are off the cuff.
It's an organic show.
It's an organic show. It's on the level of Whole Foods organic.
This is the Trader Joe's of podcasting.
Yeah.
Y'all been to Wegmans?
What the fuck?
Wegmans.
Wegmans, the grocery store?
Wegmans. I've never heard of that.
It's awesome. It's Whole Foods without an agenda.
Oh, I gotta go there. Whole Foods is just basically phenomenal. Amazon now.
Yeah, well, now it's... I've had a big thing with Whole Foods time about how fucking awful it is.
Yeah.
It's capitalist propaganda. It's the entire idea is vote with your dollar, and you just basically... You're buying a feeling of moral superiority. It's disgusting.
Yeah, we don't have many near me, but whenever I go there, I'm just like, ugh. Trader Joe's is pretty cool, I guess.
Trader Joe's is cheap. You can get like good groceries for cheap. The whole thing with organic food is fucked because like if you look into the history of organic food, like it started with humus farming, which was actually like it was the soil part of blood and soil. Like it's these practices that were like developed by German nationalists for feeding the soil. And it kind of got taken over by like hippies in the 70s who basically did organic food by being like lazy, shitty farmers. and this day and age, it's like, it's incredibly inefficient. Like the power you put into a hectare of organic food is way higher than conventional methods of farming. And it's also like conventional farming has caught up to a lot of the methods around like feeding the soil. So with USDA certification, it's just this like list of prohibitions on food, and it's fucking terrible. It's really bad.
Yeah, I've never gone down the rabbit hole of like researching the whole organic movement. And
if you do look into the history of modern agriculture, you will land upon Norman Borlaug, and you will realize that if you would go back in time and be responsible for his death, his early demise, that a lot of the problems we see today would not exist.
Would you go back in time to kill baby Norman Borlaug?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yo, he's Norwegian, though, man. Or, yeah. You couldn't do anything wrong.
So he looks cool.
That's how I think in my
head. But now we have Infinity Indians because of his agricultural practices.
He's a Nordic man.
Norman Borlaug went to India and basically held their prime minister at, you know...
Gunpoint?
At gunpoint, so to speak, demanding that they adopt his agricultural techniques, Haber Bosch process, for his, like soil replenishment.
Oh, so he's like the one that basically has been feeding, or he began the process of feeding the third world. Is that what you're saying? I really don't know.
Yes.
Oh God.
Yes. He insisted on modernizing third world agriculture to the point that it was able to produce surplus
population.
Yeah.
No, he went to fucking Pakistan and India in the 1960s and 70s. His practices made them self-sufficient in wheat production. I swear, if you look at their population, literally, like, the guy who made them explode. Thank you for telling me about this, Nikkei. No,
like, the more you read about Norman Borlaug, the more you will see how responsible he is for the, like, the catastrophic demographic situation that we are witnessing worldwide.
Oh God!
You got to take
that explains everything.
You got to take the Borlaug pill.
Yeah, the Iowa pill. At the end of the day, really.
I thought he was from Minnesota.
It says he was born in Iowa. He might have been raised in Minnesota. He's of Norwegian descent. This is what Wikipedia says. He worked on the 106-acre farm west of Pratavin, Iowa. Huh.
He's truly a global citizen and the first of its kind. And it's not a good thing.
That fucking sucks.
Yeah, well, speaking of agricultural crops create food, and I'm starving. I'm hungry.
I gotta go. Gotta go eat.
Yeah, I'm starving, or else I'm just gonna pass out on Mike.
All right, well, it was great talking to y'all. Thanks for coming, Nick. This was a great conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, great to be here.
We found someone else we could like take content from.
I don't know how much content I had.
You're like an IRL commenter.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on. And my name is Anglo. With me, I have Nikkei.
Thank you for listening.
And also, hey, don't forget him.
Bye, y'all. Mm-hmm.